Today's episode of Absurdity is sponsored by The Haystack. The Haystack is a voice for young adults in the Seventh-day Adventist Church that produces articles, music reviews, videos, and more. To check them out, go to www.thehaystack.org. The Haystack, life, culture, theology. And we are back with Absurdity. Thank you guys so much for listening. And I'm once again here with Tony. And we are one episode away from episode number 50.
That's just insane to me.
No, I'm kidding. I'm totally fine.
It is insane to me because I started this journey 2 years ago and we started like posting weekly this year. And yeah. Technically, like, if I want to be like super technical about it, we're actually at episode like 51 because I've done two bonus episodes.
Yeah, you did the two.
But based on episode numbers, like official episode numbers alone, we're at episode 49.
I think we'll go with that, yeah. Because then it makes it confusing for someone like downloading and there's like, wait, what?
Well, they say that if your podcast is really going to last, right? Like the test of a podcast is 100 episodes. If you can make it to 100 episodes, then you're going to keep going. No doubt, no questions asked, nothing. So
There's no reason you would stop. Not even death can stop us now.
Not even death can stop us now. You are correct. Which, by the way, watch something happen to us within the next week and we can't get episode 50 up.
We just tempted fate.
This would be our luck. So yeah,
No joke. Like on break, everyone thought that I was dead because I took a couple of days away from my phone, and like everyone was just panicked. Like I came back on Monday and looked at my phone and like I had like 30 missed calls and like 40 messages. People on Twitter were like, "Is he dead?" Ah! It just felt like when I walked away, and it was unplanned. Like I didn't like deliberately be like, "Okay, bye." Like, this is one of those things where like I just kind of left my phone and you know went and hung out on vacation, and literally like everyone was panicking and just imagined everyone running around like SpongeBob episode where like his brain is just like delete it, it's you know just fire and chaos.
So
and
you think you're more important than you are is what you're telling me.
If I felt that way. It was an illusion.
This is like one of those things in high school where you're like, I'm gonna stop texting all my friends to see who really cares about me. I'm going to stop talking to all my friends. Let's see who really, really values me.
And there are five people who really, really value me, apparently.
I hadn't talked to you for like a week and a half. So when I got the text wondering like, hey, is Tony alive? I was like, well, I have no clue. And Absurdity is going to be awkward if he's... my first thought was the podcast, but I just want you to know that when I presented with the possibility that you were no longer alive,
of my imminent death,
my first thought was, who's going to be my next co-host? I just want you. My first thought was
like, oh man, this is going to be a logistical nightmare.
Oh yeah, exactly. I was like, wait,
oh, and
so,
you know, like, I'm very sorry for your loss.
So like, what's
seriously?
What do I do? Do I do like an episode where I talk about how I feel about his death? Do I tweet it? Like, do I just say like, hey, no Absurdity, indefinite break until I figure out what
memorial,
to do? Yeah, like what do I?
That's Bastion.
And then our friend found a tweet from like 8 hours prior to that text, and I was like, oh, okay, he's still alive. We're fine.
It wasn't from like 8 hours. Averted. It was like legit an hour before.
Let's either way.
Like
I
it was.
Am,
it was like I just sync synchronous.
Serendipitous.
No, synchronous.
Okay, I've never heard that word. I'm 90% sure.
Sync and line up in a serendipitous manner.
No, I'm pretty sure you.
I just made it up right now because I'm that smart. I had 31 missed calls. I can make up words now.
Oh, is that it?
Okay. I can see dead kings.
You had 31 missed calls from two people, your parents. That's
actually it was four people.
Oh, your brother.
And
your
random
sister.
Friend had been I've been like talking to pretty consistently and she was like panicking. She's like, wait a minute. Did I say something? Like, what's going on? Because she's going through some stuff. And so she was like, ah, that was hilarious.
That's wonderful. All right. So
anyway,
we're going to jump in to something today that might step on some toes as if we've never done that before on this show.
The first dress.
But we're going to talk about church discipline. And church discipline is an interesting topic, in my opinion. I honestly haven't had a ton of experience as far as like firsthand dealing with it, either having to discipline someone or like watching someone go through the process of church discipline. And when I say church discipline, I mean like you're attending or a member at, you're a member at a church, right? And you do something, or someone in the church does, a member in the church does something against the values and standards, you know, cheats on their spouse or whatever, right? Like, and so the church finds out about this sin, and then it goes through the model of church discipline. And I do like all off the bat that it's called discipline and not punishment, right? Like, I think that's a good thing, because the aim for discipline would be to restore, right? Discipline is, punishment is just consequences for your actions, but discipline really kind of implies growth, implies that we are trying to do this for your benefit. And so it's really a model of correction is what it's supposed to be. And what I found, I guess, in my experience with church discipline is that it's not always the case. And to be fair, as we kind of dive into this, to be fair, when you're writing policies for an entire world church, you know, transcending all these different cultures, trying to reach into all these different cultures and apply across the board, like, you're going to fall short. There's just no way that you're not when you're trying to write a policy like that. So to some extent, like, I don't think the system can be sustainable in that sense, right? Like, it makes sense that that it would fall apart at some level. But
yeah,
Tony, I guess what has been your experience with church discipline? How would you describe it? Things like that. Like kind of give me, I guess, an overview of what you think about it.
Well, like, okay. Sorry, I got a new chair. I'm still trying to figure out the comfortable spots. So, like, I think there are two ways we have to first separate. There is ideology and practicality, like pragmatic. Or let's say even say ideology and reality. So there's church discipline in ideologically and church discipline in reality. And I think in order to understand why things are the way they are and how it works, you have to have two separate, you have to understand those two separate things, right? To be able to interpret the text. And so ideologically, you have to have a much higher standard. Like, I think church discipline works in conceptually and ideologically differently than it does pragmatically and practically. I've only experienced, well, I've experienced it from four levels. I've experienced it, well, I guess three levels. I've experienced it as an observer, an intimate observer, not personally. Like, I haven't done anything outside of church discipline or been caught. So you'll never know. That is a joke. Texas Conference, who I work for and sponsor, I would never do something against the morals and obligations of the church. No, like seriously, like I was an intimate observer. I had something to someone who was very close to me who made some mistakes, and they had to have church discipline with them. That's a situation I will try to talk about as carefully as I can. It's not my story to tell, but it is from my perspective. Then I experienced it as a further back observer, as in it happened to a church in the area that I was close to. And then as a really back observer, I experienced it as my father's son. And I watched him deal with church discipline, which was where I, that can kind of be put into two categories where, like, I watched it as a member and I watched my president handle things. And then I watched it as, you know, like my dad, you know, handling his business. And so from those different perspectives, it's very, very, very different. And that's why I say I have to split it up. I think ideologically, we are very biblically based in our idea of church discipline. I think ideologically, I agree with it. I think it's really, really well worded. I think it's well-intentioned. I think it is broad enough and the language is loose enough. And we can't go through all of it. It's just too much. But if any of you have a chance and you just are interested in it, you can find it in the church manual. And yeah, you can, well, the SDA Church manual, and you can just kind of read through.
You can Google that. It's a free download. Yeah, it's totally free. I'll also include a link in the description so anyone can see that. That's the church. Sure. It's the same church manual that all pastors use, churches use. Like, you're not seeing anything different.
Chapter 8 or something? I can't remember.
It's like 60 pages in. Don't ask me why I know that.
It's fairly close. It's like 60 pages in. Like, at one point, I had that whole book almost like memorized as far as like what was where. And then, like, I just... Anyway, so I think going back to school kind of pushed all that up. Anyway, so read through it for yourself. And like I say, when I read through it, I remember just thinking like the language here is very broad in general, which is really, really good. So it can involve like a plethora of different events, but it also gives really good motivation for why we have it, why it exists, why we need it, and what we can kind of do about it. And so I really like it. That's kind of the takeaway from that ideologically.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It is also, the problem lies in this, in trying to be fair and do things in a fair and ideological manner with the policy, it leaves a lot of room for interpretation. And so much like the U.S. Constitution, people kind of take it in different ways. So... I have seen church discipline done well, I've seen it done right, and I've seen it done wrong two different ways. It is very difficult to do it correctly. And if it is done correctly, oftentimes it will offend many, many people. So the way that you do it correctly, practically, like pragmatically, in reality, the way that you do it correctly is first you confront the person, right, one-on-one, the person who actually did it, right, Matthew 18. Method, which is you confront the person one-on-one, right? And you say, hey, you know, this is an issue. Then you bring somebody with you, and then you take it to the group. And if they still don't do that, then you go, look, this is something that is hurting you. It is hurting other people. We cannot allow you to continue to be here because you are going to keep hurting yourself and other people. And so you then remove them from that situation. This is, I believe, Jesus and Paul are the two examples that they use about this. So you move them from that situation, and then you treat them as an outsider, meaning not that you shun them, but rather you go evangelistically, right? Mm-hmm. And so you focus on the gospel. You do like you would do anybody else, right? You focus on, hey, here are the basic bones of why it's important to be a Christian, and you try to kind of win them back. In the right way, but you do so in a safe environment. And that's the purpose of church discipline, which again, ideologically, is the purpose is to put them out there. Now, the problem is this only works if the person is completely compliant, right?
Which is funny because at that point you're working with someone who hasn't been compliant.
Right? like, which is kind of, that's the problem is like, well, if they had this attitude of willing to work with you, you wouldn't have had to do this in the first place.
Exactly.
So a lot of times when you do that, it really is with the idea of there's a slight chance they will come back. But the reality is a lot of times it's just to kind of put them in a safe place where we can deal with this issue. So, for instance, let's say let's do an easy one that everyone do, drug abuse, right? Like they are abusing drugs, hard, you know, drugs. You put them in a safe place, like a halfway house, so that they can learn, you know, to adjust, readjust, right? Yeah. So they don't have to deal with everything, and they are not exposed to places where they are going to get, you know, more opportunities to get high. And this is the issue that we have in the churches. A lot of times we don't even do the halfway house. We just kick them out on the street and we're like, okay, we don't care about you anymore. So the two ways that I've seen it done wrong is number one, erring too much on the side of, I don't want to say grace because it's that's the way people often do it is to err on the side of grace. It's not grace.
Would you say err on the side of non-confrontation?
On non-confrontation. That is exactly where I was going with it, number one. And the second side is to excommunicate. Not in the Catholic term, but in the true sense of that word.
Like you just stop associating with them.
Yeah. In the true sense of that, you know, anathema, you know, that kind of stuff. Which is also a biblical thing, right? There are people that, you know, he goes, if you continue to do this and they don't, let them be anathema. You know, let them be, you know, they are. So that's a big word that basically just means like.
Use another big word.
Shun. They're a pariah. They're an outcast. They're basically like, just like we don't associate with you anymore. Like we can't, you are just hurting people. So we're not going to deal with you. Yeah. It was interesting. The only time that they become anathema is if they are like actively causing trouble in the church, like actively causing problems. It's like somebody who's struggling with a sin is not what that is supposed to be used for. It's meant to be used for somebody who's coming in and yelling at people and causing fights and, you know, gossiping and all that issue. It's like, okay, you are toxic. It's meant for toxicity, not for people who are struggling. Yeah. But anyway, the point being that so those are the two extremes that I've seen it go on, where we kick you out and we don't love you, we don't care about you, get out, you are ruining our perfect church. Or, man, we just were so worried that you were going to leave us that we just keep letting you be this either toxic person or have this horrible habit that is hurting you and hurting yourselves. Because this is the interesting thing about discipline. God says, those who I love, I chasten, right? I punish those that I love because I want you to get better. I put it this way. If you see your friend stabbing themselves in the leg, your good friend, and they're stabbing themselves in the leg, and they're like, man, I don't know why I keep hurting. I have all this pain. And you're just like, I want them to be my friend, so I won't tell them. Like, I'll just be like, I don't know, man, life is hard. A good friend walks up to them and goes, it's because you're stabbing yourself in the leg, right? Mm-hmm. And like, sometimes you have to forcibly remove the knife from their hand and be like, look, I'm going to give you some time to not stab yourself. And if you decide that the pain, you know, because the reality is I've had friends where I have said that in a metaphorical way and they're like, yeah, but nah, I think I'm just going to keep stabbing myself. And I'm like, I don't know how to help you then. I don't know. Like, you know, this is what's causing you pain, but you're going to keep doing that. Okay. Well then that's, I don't know what I can do at this point. And that's just the sad reality of church discipline. Church discipline is meant to take the knife out of their hands, at least for a time period, and then say, we are going to try to, you know, help you with this issue, because sin separates us from God. That is the base definition of sin. And I think that's where a lot of Adventists, I've been talking for a long time, I'm going to shut up, but I think that's where a lot of Adventists and a lot of Christians falter, and where we don't do good at discipline is not understanding what sin is. And sin is anything that separates us from God. So when he writes in the Bible, in his book, in the book that he reveals himself to us and how he works, when he says, these are things that are going to keep you from me, they're not quote unquote bad things, but they are bad because they keep you from him. Anything that keeps you from him is bad for you by definition.
Well, and we've talked about this on the episode with mental illness, where someone who is not intending to cause you harm, but because of their mental illness still causes you harm, it's still malicious, even if its intent is not malicious.
The effects
are. And so, exactly. So there's still that problem of, it's not inherently bad in and of itself, but it might be bad for you because of what it's doing or what it's causing in that separation.
Exactly.
Now, I think when it comes to church discipline and non-confrontation too, I think here's what you see as a weakness, I actually see as a strength. And my problem with it is that it's not clearly communicated. My favorite thing about the church manual is that it's written so broadly that there is room for interpretation. The problem that I find with it is too many people think that every word in the church manual is meant to be followed as law, right? And so, you know, church manual section 13.B.C.13 says this. Like, they try to follow it like it's a law, and it's not meant to be a law. It's meant to be a guidebook. It's meant to kind of set us in the right direction and figure out what works for us. That's why, and if you don't believe me, just go ahead and look at everywhere in the church manual when it gives you a description of different positions, like for church leadership, and then compare it to your church and show me all the ones that don't match. Every church does something differently, and that's okay. And that's what the church manual is meant to embrace. The problem is that, and I think this is part of my issue, is it's not clearly communicated. And so what you end up with is people trying to follow it to the letter of the law. It doesn't make sense in their context.
There's some points that, clearly this is, don't kill people. Like, that's kind of,
Yeah.
Even that can be kind of interpreted like with soldiers and stuff, but like, don't murder. Like, you know, like yeah, that's kind of something that's like, yeah, that's pretty, you know, we can do that face to face, but most of it is subject to interpretation.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think the other part of this, at least with non-confrontation in my experience, is sometimes the chain gets interrupted. Like they call it the chain of evidence in like law, right? Or the chain of custody, whatever, I forget the term is, but you know, how evidence is handled from point A to point B. And if there's anything wrong with that, the whole case can get thrown out. If they find out that it didn't follow the proper chain.
Handled in a proper protocol. Yeah.
So the problem then, and this is something that I've faced, is if people don't tell you there's a problem and you find out about it in a way where like, you can't do anything about it, then you end up erring on the side of non-confrontation because there is nothing you can do about it. Because either that, and this I think is my problem with church discipline currently, and it's not necessarily the discipline side, it's the people side, which is this. We are not clearly communicating to people that they are now accountable to the community they have entered.
Right, yes.
And so what ends up happening is if someone messes up, they're not going to listen to, like if one of my church members does something, right, and this is not just like, my current two churches, this is like any church, if I'm just a general pastor, right? If someone messes up and they don't see themselves as accountable to me as their pastor or accountable to the community that they're a part of, right? I can understand why they might not see themselves as accountable to me because I've only been at a place for X years. But, you know, the community right. that they've grown up with, right? Like, if they don't see themselves as accountable, then they're not going to go to them or they're not going to listen to them when they try and call them out. And this is something, like, it's my pet peeve, too, when people who I don't hold myself accountable to try and call me out on things. Like, that's a pet peeve of mine. If you try to correct me, and I don't know you, and you try to speak into an area of my life that I haven't given you permission to. And I think that's part of a failure of discipleship on the leadership end. As people are joining the church, and I'm not saying it needs to be a baptismal vow. I'm just saying it needs to be some sort of expectation needs to be set, especially in Western culture where everything is so individualistic and relativistic, that like we need to set the standard or the expectation that says, look, we do things differently in Christianity because we are operating under a different banner, under a different culture. And in this culture, we hold ourselves accountable to the community. And that's incredibly vital, and it's not happening. And so you have all these Western Christians joining the church with no sense of accountability.
Right. And keep in mind, when we talk about accountability, we're not talking about I get to now tell you how to live your life. Rather, as the Holy Spirit convicts you in relationship, you and I now work to keep each other true to the beliefs that we know we have. That's accountability.
Yeah.
That's accountability. The best way I can describe it is like, you mean, this is literally how we became best friends and how Steve and I became best friends. You know, we were talking in undergrad about how hard it is to be... To really study your Bible consistently and this is to really stay in the scripture. And so we said, well, like every day, let's just meet up, you know, in the basement there in Talge in the guy's dorm, because Steve worked there every day at 6, and let's just meet up and talk, you know, and keep each other accountable and be like, hey, what did you read today? You know, did you go in? And if we didn't read, it wasn't like we sat there and we're like, well, you were, you know, shame. It was more like, okay, well, like, hey, this is what God told me today. And it just gave us a purpose to be like, we want to be in here. We believe we should be in the scriptures. We should be talking to God and spending time with him every day. So we're going to help each other achieve that goal. And the problem is I think we switch those and we tell people, okay, now we get to tell you what to do. Instead of saying, now you are a part of our family, we're gonna help each other become better. Like we're gonna help each other on this journey to where you no longer have to do this on your own. And this is another big issue. If we had that mentality, we would be able to retain so many other people. Like so many people, like it's a revolving door because they come in and they have this kind of community helping them to come in because they were a lot interested because we want to do evangelism. And then they're on their own and they lose that community the moment that they get baptized. They're like, okay, now you're not, we don't care about you anymore.
Yeah. Like baptism is the finish line, but in reality, it's the starting line.
It's the starting line.
Wow. Right, and right. Like all the Bible studies prior to a baptism are like the training sessions prior to the race starting, but baptism is showing up on race day.
Right.
Like that's Well, by the way, I just want to point out, I think it's hilarious. Steve gets like a weird shout out every time we talk about him, and yet he never consistently listens to these episodes. So yeah. He has no clue that he is constantly on this show. And I just think that's hilarious.
It's awesome. We got to get him on one of these days just so everyone will be like, it's him.
Well, he's been on before. If everyone goes back to the dark times of this podcast when I had no idea what I was doing, I still don't, but I have like some more of a grasp. But he's like episode 2 or 3 or something. But yeah, Stephen Hall, that's the episode you should go listen to.
He was. Oh, that's right.
He was
right.
One of my first guests.
I totally forgot that.
But no, you're right. Accountability is a community saying we're going to walk together through this. And I think this is not a weakness. Once again, I think the weakness is that it's not strength, communicated. Yeah. But the model of church discipline is predicated on or is founded upon the idea that your community is a community, right? Yeah. It assumes that you are in friendship with your people.
Yep.
That you would be given the space to hold them accountable.
Which is, again, why I think there's a split between ideology and practicality.
Bingo.
Reality.
Yeah.
Right? There's a huge dichotomy between those two. And I think that's another reason why a lot of millennials in our generation and you know, Gen Z, I think that's why they're really leaving the church. You know, another reason I think why is because they see that dichotomy of like back in my mom's day, I remember her telling me stories, like horror stories of like pastors stopping sermons to come down and call somebody out in front of the whole church. And I would be as a visitor, as a pastor, I would call that dude out.
Oh yeah.
Now I would stand up and be like, hi everybody, I'm your new pastor. Like, we're killing this dude. Like, because, and I'm joking when I say that, but I'm like, to me, that is like the absolute, but again, I talk about that, like reality is so different from ideology. You know, church discipline is never meant to call out visitors. Like, I've seen church discipline used against visitors where they're like, oh, we kind of, you know, we can't really wear shirts and stuff. And I'm like,
it's not how that works at all. You
just tell a visitor did you just criticize his clothing? Like, I've had leaders in my church as a pastor come up to young mothers and complain about their cleavage. And she's like, I'm a nursing mom. My shirts don't fit me. I'm sorry. You know, like,
yeah,
and that's the thing, is there was no understanding of the ideology in reality. And that's the problem, is when you assume that you have that community, if that community is not there, then it becomes a real issue. The first example where I really saw the split, and this is talking about the pros, when it was done well, when it was really done well. There was a pastor in a certain conference that I will not mention that embezzled $35,000 from the church, right? The way that it was handled was that he was fired and they pressed charges, right?
Okay.
But they did not go after him for malicious intent. It was simply, we need the money back. They pressed charges because they're like, he needs to pay us back. But they didn't, like, basically, they didn't go after him for malicious intent. They didn't sue him, none of that. It was just, we're going to press charges. You stole money from the church. That is not okay. You have to pay us back. The family of this pastor freaked out. And supposedly people left, you know, they left the church over and they said, where's the grace in this and all that? And I go, but that was handled so well because he broke the trust of the church, right? Yep. He stole money, right? Like, you know, from a business or whatever. And they didn't press it as far as they could. They just simply said, you need to be able to pay us back. Like, this is not okay. We need you to understand that this is not okay. We cannot let you simply get away with this. Because contrition without consequence is not true repentance.
Without being willing to face that consequence.
Right. I'm not
like
saying
if someone decides to give you grace and say you don't have to face that consequence, that's on the person who doles
out
the grace.
Right. But you need to have to look down that barrel and accept that. You know what I mean? Like, you need to be able to look that down and be like, no, I deserve this. Otherwise, you're just going to be like, sweet, I got away with it. And so that it was handled so well. And I remember seeing that thinking, why are they complaining? Like, if they really wanted to be nasty, they could, this dude, like, he's dead. They got him dead to rights, and they didn't. The second time I saw it handled really well, really, 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 really well, was there was a church member who was dealing with a major, major issue. They were being extremely not cool about this issue, and they were not handling it well. They did not respond to the first polite overtures, and basically they didn't, the nice way didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, hey, as much as we, we're going to ask you not to, we're going to remove your name from the books, and we're going to ask you not to come up, to go up front and not be, have this leadership position. We're going to ask you to resign. We don't want to remove you, but we're going to ask you to resign this position. They made a big deal about that. No, I'm not going to do it. You're going to have to KPS. So they did, right? They forcibly went to business. They said, we don't want to drag you through it. We want to be able to handle this in a nice way. So they went in front of the church. This is what's crazy, man. They went in front of the church, and rather than air out the dirty laundry, said, we have one of our own is struggling with this issue. And literally the church business meeting wasn't, we need to get them out. It was, how can we best go about helping them with this issue? And literally the church in business session got together and said, well, and not only validated everything that the church had done as far as the leadership, the board, but then said they assigned people to go and visit this individual and this individual's family every day or every week. And they assigned groups, and they went in and started inviting them to things. And it was crazy because this person was so overwhelmed by the support that they had, that they the reason why they lashed out was because they were embarrassed and ashamed that they had been caught, and it was a way of I'm going to hurt you so that you can't hurt me,
yeah,
kind of a deal, kind of like a first strike. And the fact that they did not respond, they responded only with love. They not only gave up this issue they were dealing with, but they spent 5 years under censure, self-censure. Not like the church was like, you can't do that. They removed themselves for 5 years and then got rebaptized and this whole thing. And I was like, wow, that's crazy. That's one of the rare times where you had a belligerent individual, someone who was deliberately making things hard, go out. So those are the two times that I saw it work so, so well. Unfortunately, for the first one, I don't believe a lot of people in that situation came back to the church, but I know for a fact that it brought a lot of healing to the church that this pastor had hurt. The way that the leadership went about it really helped that church, in the future. As it didn't close. Sometimes that can kill a church.
Yeah.
Something of that magnitude. And so just the way they went about it, the transparency and everything, it handled so well that it brought healing to the church, if not to that individual and his family. And then with this other one, it just brought so much healing to, A, the church, but also particularly this individual.
And this is, I think with church discipline, I think the best church discipline is properly contextualized discipline.
It really is.
So there's a dean we both know, so it's not my story. I don't want to name names on it, but who caught a student with weed or some drug. I'm 80% sure it was weed. And this was years and years ago, right? And unfortunately, in the dorm, because of that and because of what protocol was, he had to call the police. And basically, he made the student go through the full consequences of getting caught and possession and using drugs. So kid ends up getting some jail time for it, ends up missing out on school. But here's what the dean did. The dean then continued to write that student letters in prison through his entire time there, continued to build a relationship with him. And later on, that kid gets out and comes back to the dean and basically says, you were the only person that through that time stayed in contact with me, stayed in touch with me. And, I fully understand why you did what you did. I'm not mad at you. And I've decided, look, you're the only person that kept me in this. And I really want to give my life to Christ and do this for real. And so I think not every single person who's caught with possession is handled the same way. Not every pastor or not, you know, not every member is treated the same way as a pastor when it comes down to getting caught in some certain sin, right? Like if a member is caught in a certain sin and that pastor is caught in the same sin, it might be that the pastor gets fired. The member, I can't fire you anyway. I'm not a fan of just saying that there's a blanket discipline for, there's only like one or two cases of it at the moment that I think like, I can't plausibly think of how this would not be the case. And that would be sexual assault and child and like abuse, things like that, like actual physical harm to someone where there's clear evidence one way or the other. But outside of that, like a lot of it is contextualized.
The only reason you would have a blanket punishment or consequence is to avoid worse. You know what I mean? To set a ceiling of like, you can go this far and only this, like, you know, it's not meant to go worse, which incidentally, this is what's interesting. A lot of the punishments that are given in the Bible are meant to be understood in that terms of like, this is the worst thing you do. Like if you can avoid that, avoid it, but like do this, but no further, you know, you can, you know, an eye for an eye. The reason why that was given a lot, that sounds really harsh for Christians now, like an eye for an eye, man. But it was like, no. You can't take an eye, a tooth, an ear, a nose. You know what I mean? Like it's even, like this is as far as you can go. If they took an eye, you can take an eye. It's meant to be fair. So that would be the only reason to have a blanket discipline. But the problem with that is people take that and then they push for the maximum. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they don't understand the spirit of that. And so, yeah, sometimes you have to just say and I agree with you 100%, the pros of our discipline system are that A, it can bring healing to the entire community, and B, it can be contextualized, which is the best way to do it. And even in the same two people can have, you know, do the same exact thing in the same exact place. One person needs a different punishment than the other. And they can say, oh, it's not fair, it's not nice. But not everyone responds to punishment the same way. Anyone who's ever worked with kids, or if anyone's a parent listening to this, you know, every kid deals with punishment a certain way. Some kids, like, all you have to do is look at them the wrong way, and they're like, ah, and they feel remorse, and they're sad. Some kids don't get it unless you're like, okay, we're going to take this thing away and, you know, not work, you know, you can't have this toy for a month or whatever. Like, and then, or some, you have to lecture them and just sit there and be like, listen to me talk and ramble on and on and on. And then the kid's like, I'll never do it again, please. Yeah, that was me. So ADHD. So like, you know, discipline, the best discipline, I agree with you, has to be contextualized because everyone responds to it in a different way. And not every situation needs the maximum allowable punishment.
Well, I guess here's my problem. And maybe I can propose a solution in saying the problem as well. The problem that I find is that most churches in practice, because I agree with you that ideology is pretty solid, theology is pretty solid on it, but in practice, what I find is that churches use discipline as a method of removing the sin or sinner, but without actually restoring people or healing, bringing healing to the community and that person involved, right? Like we take things like Paul, where he says, remove the sexual immoral from you, and don't associate with them, don't even talk with them. And we're like, well, all right, fine, we won't talk to them. Like we take everything super literal without realizing any context. And what ends up happening is like you end up with broken families, because like here's the thing: if someone decides to do something against their family, husband or wife, right, or a kid, whatever, and we only focus on that one person that messed up, the problem is that their sin has now impacted everyone. Especially if that family is important to the church they're in. So it's not just a matter of removing the sinner and pretending they don't exist, because now you've still got their family here, right? You've still got their friends here who know them. And so there's a way to handle discipline in which, so this is where I think I am. I think we've gotten lazy with the church manual. And because the church manual talks about certain things, our churches have assumed that we don't need to create anything around these. I think that every church, this is new, right? This is the first time I'm even thinking about this, and I'm being more and more convinced as I talk about it.
Spitballing.
So, I think every church should have a theology of discipline. Some sort of like in business session, the church has created and dove into the idea of discipline, why we do it, why this church does it, what is the approach that this church will take, and why will we, what key parts of the church manual are we going to use here, and what is there room for interpretation on that we can apply to our situation? What's the chain? What's the chain of reporting things? Why is the chain that way? Who approaches who? Like, we don't sit and create this sort of structure and plan for this. So we build an organization based off of things that are not ours. Like, we don't actually take ownership over the manual. A lot of church members probably don't even know the manual exists. They probably assume there's some manual, but it's this like exists in the cloud. Well,
they think it's nebulous. For the pastor.
Yeah.
That's for the pastor. And it's like, no, there's a pastor's guide. There's a book that is for us. But no, like,
it's for everyone.
This is for everyone.
And yeah. So I do think, and I think this is easier to do with a church plant than it is an actual church, right? Like, if you're doing it with a church,
an established church, it's hard.
But I mean, if you're in the process of rebuilding anyway in certain things, then that's one of the things you can do. And it's a hard journey. But when you're talking about potentially healing people and bringing restoration and saving people, like, then I think that work is worth it, to be honest.
And it should happen. Just because you're already in an established church doesn't mean you shouldn't try. It's one of those things that you can always improve. There is no golden era. The best is always yet to come. The best is always yet to come. I mean, for some churches, there was a golden time where they were, you know, firing all cylinders and people move away. But I believe that every church, I really truly do believe that every church can get better. And so every congregation can get better. And so I think if you don't, you absolutely should have a theology, not just a policy of discipline, which should go into the theology, because policy is there to protect you. I always say, one of the things when we were talking about in undergrad, whenever, someone would ask a question of like, what if this, what if that, my go-to answer was call your conference, because they're there to protect you. Like, policy is there to protect you. Legally, like from litigation and stuff like that. But policy doesn't explain motivation. And so when you understand the motivation and the theology of it, now you have your why. Now the policy makes sense. Now it's like, yes, we've protected ourselves from the secular litigation, litigious issue, but now we're going to explain why we're doing these things. Now we're going to explain the importance of it. Because I think that's the real weakness in our system. And that's a flaw in our system, is that a lot of times, because we don't know that why, it becomes one or the other. So for instance, one of the bad examples, a close friend of mine growing up, I guess I can say that, got pregnant out of wedlock and was a child of a church leader. And the way that church handled it, unfortunately, because there were a lot of women in that church who had kids out of wedlock, they responded to it as though it was not an issue at all. Now, understand, I don't think that you should be throwing anyone under a bus. I'm not an advocate for that. But their response was, this is so amazing, this is so great, let's just celebrate it. And it's like, hold up. First off, it was statutory. So, A, that's not good. And B, it was like, well, this is not something that we should be celebrating. I'm not saying make it negative and just like shame. But I'm saying this is something that clearly is something that we don't want to affirm. Right? Like, the actions was not okay. And unfortunately, my church erred on the side of non-confrontation to the point of like almost not even acknowledging that this was a sin and the consequences of that. And so unfortunately, because of that, it really split the church. It really did. Because there were people that said, like, the Bible says this is not okay. Like, we have to, like, there needs to be a different way. She was going up front with the bump. She was singing songs. She was doing stuff up front, visibly pregnant, out of wedlock. And again, I am all about grace. If you know me, you know I am all about love and grace and support and community. But I go, there needed to be something, because she knew, right? It wasn't even about her at this point. She knew what she had done. The problem was, you had a lot of little girls in our church who are now seeing this, right? The problem was, this was affecting more than her. And what we needed to say, and that's why I say the reality of the church is different than the ideology. Ideologically, yeah, you wanna balance that line. And unfortunately, this church did not react in a right way, and it split a lot. There were a lot of members that ended up leaving because of that, because they go, I don't want my girls to see this. This is not okay. This is not okay behavior. This is harmful behavior. And so we had to do that. And it caused a lot of issues. So that one was the erring on the side of that. Then you had another one where they straight up just booted someone out. The pastor was a legalist, which is bad. I don't care where you fall on the conservative, traditional, non-traditional, liberal, whatever line. Legalism is not okay, and legalism can come from liberals and conservatives. So let's just get that out of the way. So the dude was a legalist. And there was a former pastor. He had left the ministry because he got very disillusioned with some stuff. And he called him in because he was technically still on the rolls, and not only called him out in front of the entire church and business session, but specifically, like, he made it personal, right? And like, kicked him out. And unfortunately, that was enough for that guy. Now, the church reacted negatively to the pastor. The pastor ended up having to leave after a few months after that. But the damage had been done, right? This person was kicked out. They were shunned, you know, and it's like, and they had not gone to this particular congregation. They'd gone to another congregation that was a part of that district. But it was just so, the way that he was treated was so horrible that basically, he will never step foot in an Adventist church again. Mm. Nothing to do. Believes the Adventist message, will never set foot in an Adventist church again. Both of those are wrong.
Okay, but can I push back on something real quick? Not that I disagree with anything you've said so far, right? I want to push back on this, which is, earlier you shared a story about a pastor getting fired and people getting mad about that.
Yeah.
And now you're telling me two stories where the model or the method of discipline ended up hurting the communities they're in and causing damage. So, like, your metric, part of your metric for determining whether the discipline was improper or inappropriate was the damage it caused to the community. But even in the pastor's sin, right? And in that method of discipline, there was damage to the community, but you justified it because you agreed with the method of discipline. So I guess I want to clarify for me.
Define that first part where the damage was done to the community, but.
Yeah, but you agreed with the method of discipline for the pastor, right? So the damage was done to the community, and that the community was angry and mad and lashed out, said, why are you doing this? Why don't you have grace? Things like that. Whereas in the other two, you said damage was done to the community because there were impressions made or whatever.
With the
out of wedlock pregnancy.
Oh, okay.
Right. Like I guess my question is, when is damage to the community or community reaction a indicator of appropriate discipline or inappropriate discipline? And that's why I'm pushing back, not because I agree with all of your conclusions. I just want to make sure I'm trying to be consistent here, and I'm trying to understand it too. Because I have people that listen. We have people that listen to this that don't come from the same context we do.
No, for sure. Let me define what I meant with that other one. The issue was that, and go back to the sin, right? Sin is something that separates us from God, right?
Yeah.
Because of the actions of that community, it promoted the idea that you can sin and disconnect yourself from God and be okay. Right? And that is never okay. And by the way, that one incident, that is never okay in any context. So that incident aside, anytime that happens, that is not okay. Right? Same with someone who is toxic. right? If the other community, like, and I've had other examples that I have not had been close to, but I've heard about other examples where a pastor or someone in leadership has been toxic to someone and the community has been like, yeah, he acted correctly because this person was bad, right? That's just as bad as this instance. So that's the point that I'm making there is whether or not a part of the community, by the way, because that wasn't a large part of the church. That was simply there was church leadership and a portion of the community that did not react in the correct way. But the problem was that that community, that church was not together as a whole. For the out of wedlock situation. And they needed to all get on the same page. And the problem was that these people they refused to see it as an issue. They refused to see it as an issue.
So to me, I think where this kind of lands as far as that what I just asked you is concerned, then and what you're saying to me kind of sounds like it really depends on what message the discipliner is sending. Right. So Correct. We're asking ourselves, what message am I sending to my members and what message am I sending to the person who I'm disciplining?
Exactly.
Because community backlash or community reaction, while in some extreme cases, I think can determine what happens with discipline. Right. Like there are times where I, as a pastor, would want to discipline a member for something. But if the church votes against me on disciplining them, then there's nothing I can do. Because the church has outvoted me, right? So at some point, you're just kind of stuck. And I understand that. And sometimes there's backlash to the point where you say, okay, well, this, like James Gunn getting fired from Guardians of the Galaxy for his old tweets. There's community backlash, and Disney has doubled down instead on their decision.
Oh, really?
But in some cases,
I heard Marvel was trying to... That's not the point of this talk.
Sorry. It's still ongoing, right? It's still an ongoing
thing. The nerd in me kicked in there.
Yeah, no, I know. It's still ongoing. But like there are other cases in that kind of thing where,
for sure.
Where people have said, hey, we're sorry, we overreacted, we're going to rehire X person for this job or go back on, or we're going to renege what we said. And so there's moments where community backlash, I think, does drive our method of discipline. But in general, I think we need to say, like, what message are we sending? Because in many cases, and this is the problem too, it comes back to Christian celebrity culture as well, especially Adventist celebrity culture. If the person that you're disciplining or forced to discipline is popular, then you're going to hurt, like, you're not going to hurt. Their sin is what's hurting the community, but the community is going to hurt, and they're going to lash out of that pain. We watched that with Bill Hybels at Willow Creek.
That's become a whole.
Yeah, that's become a giant mess. Just Google that, because now the pastor who took his place and the entire board of elders have resigned.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane for the way they handled it, which props to them for finally resigning on that. Like, props to them for facing that consequence, though we shouldn't have never had to get to that point to begin with. But that's what that's discipline too, is we are at the point that we shouldn't have had to get to, and so now we have to deal with it. But I think if the team that is handing out discipline asks themselves, what message are we sending by doing this? And then making sure that the whole team is on the same page regarding that message. This is what this is trying to communicate, which is this action, this behavior, this result, none of it is okay. We do not approve of it. And that is not the standard in which we live in this community. I think we do need to be clear on what message we're sending.
Right. Because here's the thing. And I'll say with the situation with the out of wedlock, here's what I think should have happened. Now, I reacted to it. I was very young, so I reacted to it in a very immature way. But my parents, the pastor of that church was in a bad place personally and did not handle it well, which is another issue, right? Because the pastor should have come in and helped get everyone on the same page. Bad leadership. There were a lot of issues at the church. But the issue that really should, you know, that my parents were talking and they go, look, the right thing to do is not to shame her. But so that everyone understands this is not okay, there needs to be a time of censorship, right? Where she needs to quote unquote pay for what she's done, right? She can't have leadership until the baby's born. like just remove, you know, she was one of the Sabbath school teachers and stuff. You know what I mean? Like she was teaching Sabbath school in this. And it was like, no, we're going to send a message so everyone in this community understands this is not okay, but we are going to put her in a place where we are going to restore her back to where she was before. Because that's what grace is about.
Yes.
Grace does not, what's the word I'm looking for? Grace acknowledges that something has been done, right? Something disconnect has happened. Something bad has occurred. Grace does not cover that over, but rather grace says, I am going to now restore you and put you in a place where that never happened.
Yeah.
It did happen, but I'm going to act as though it did not. However, the consequences for that have to happen, right? But you might not necessarily be the one to pay for it, but someone has to pay. This is the thing that nobody gets. That's the issue also of Christian forgiveness. A lot of times people just want to gloss over and be like, oh, well, you know, I mean, how many times have we heard these pastors where it's like, well, he seems sorry, but it's like, no, you sexually assaulted somebody. You need to pay for that.
Yeah.
Right? Now, you shouldn't have to burn forever if you accept Christ over, but you did something wrong. And so to bring healing in the situation, every situation should be about healing. I you know, a lot of people question whether or not the church should, should we restore people? The only time you shouldn't restore somebody is if they are a toxic person, right? And this situation with the friend of mine who was the wedlock situation, she wasn't toxic. She wasn't going around to the other girls being like, yeah, all right, I'm protected. Like, no, she was contrite.
Yeah.
So the right thing would be to put her over and just say, hey, we're going to support you through this. We're going to help you through this. But we need you to step away so it doesn't look like we're promoting sin.
Well, right? And I think we should be clear on what restoration is, because restoration is not restoring someone or putting someone back where they were prior to their sin. Restoring someone is restoring their relationship with Christ, putting them on the right path. Stuff. Like with someone who's pregnant, you can never restore them to their pre-pregnant time.
Her dad wanted to try to do that, but that's not.
And that's the problem.
We don't support that either.
So you don't discipline someone by making them sin more. But then, like with pastors or leaders in your church, they've been entrusted with something to whom much is given, much is expected. And they've been entrusted with people. They've been given trust and they've been given respect. And if they break that with sexual assault, with abuse, with theft, things like that, okay, they've broken that trust. And restoring them doesn't always mean that you put them back in the pulpit.
Nope. Yeah,
it doesn't mean that
not.
You put them back in charge of churches. And so, right, like someone who robs banks, you don't look to restore them by putting them as a bank teller. Necessarily.
Yeah.
So it's
you don't rehab a peeping Tom by sticking him in a room with models. Like,
yeah, that's
it. So doesn't make any sense.
So there's restoring does not mean restore. And okay, even in salvation, right? God, when he is restoring the earth and recreating it after heaven, right? So that his new, if you don't know that, yeah, go read Revelation. There's a new earth.
Exciting. Good
heaven
book.
And an old earth had passed away. Yeah. So it's, when God restores that earth and restores us, he's not restoring us so that he can drop us back into this life and we do it over.
Yeah.
He's restoring us and putting us in a completely new situation, one that is designed for our success as well.
And I think you said it. I don't think the church should restore as much as recreate, because God recreates. He restores relationship. He recreates character. And that's, I think, the key. Discipline should always be about recreating character and restoring. So that restoring relationship, right? I want us to get back to where we were at versus, oh, well, you could be a pastor again. It's like, no. You can get to the point where you were, like, say I end up, you know, doing something naughty and getting, you know, fired. I can still be a minister. I can still minister. I don't think I should be restored to that position. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
You can still be someone who does evangelism and who reaches people for Christ, but you were no longer the person.
Maybe not in that role. Right.
Bingo. There's
more
ways to do it.
I can still get back to the point where my relationship with God was when I was at my best as a pastor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which ironically might actually, being a pastor really stressed me out and hurt my relationship with God. But, you know, you learn. but I can get to the point where I can restore that relationship, right? Where I'm talking to him every day, where I'm you know, studying my Bible to that point where I'm doing all that. That can be restored. My character must be recreated, maybe not in that position, in that role. And that's the point of church discipline. The point of church discipline is always, the point of Christianity is always to bring people closer to God. It's always to bring people closer to Jesus. My job as a pastor is to make people better Jesus followers, whether that's through training, whether that's through discipline, whether that's through leadership, whether that's through preaching, whatever it is, I am here to make people better Jesus followers. And in the same way, we are all here to make other people better Jesus followers. We have different roles in how we do that. And discipline is one of those roles, which is why Jesus took time, not just Paul. He didn't let anybody else. Jesus took time to talk about how to confront and how to discipline and what the purpose of that should be. Mm-hmm. Because it's so important for him. And by the way, this is what's interesting. Another great model for how to discipline people is Jesus, because he did that. Jesus never told a sinner they were a sinner. Right?
Yeah.
Jesus only told people who thought they weren't sinners that they were, right? Jesus called out the Pharisees, the religious leaders, and was like, yeah, you guys are a bunch of hypocrites. Right? You guys think you're all good, but you break God's laws. Right? He talked to them because they were under this illusion and deluding themselves that they were fine. Jesus goes up to the woman at the well. Jesus goes up to the Lazarus and the blind people and all this stuff. He doesn't have to tell them, oh, you're a sinner, right? A woman caught in adultery. He doesn't come up to her and go, you're a sinner. He says, hey, don't do this anymore. I don't condemn you. I love you. I'm here to make this better. Follow me. Right? Matthew, I mean, he has on his staff somebody who cheated and lied and stole from people, because that's what tax collectors did. And he goes, okay, follow me. Stop doing that. And I'm going to help you out. Peter denied Jesus 3 times. Sin? I mean, keep this in mind. A lot of people were like, well, that wasn't really a sin. I'm like, okay, first off, he swore to the point that people didn't think he could follow Jesus. So, right, yeah. Like that's how he convinced them.
And he had lied to Jesus because he said that he lied.
Right, so there's a sin right there. But beyond even that, right, sin creates separation. He literally separated himself from Jesus, not only in reputation, but you know, in just how he acted in character.
Yeah.
Jesus looks at Peter and says, hey, you want to make up for that? Feed my lambs, feed my sheep. We're good. There's a reason why Jesus, the way he went about it was like, dude, we're good. But if you want to make it up to me, love these people.
Yeah.
Right? How? Love the community. Take care of my people. Be the person that you were meant to be. That is how discipline should be handled. And I think that's the strength that we have in our church, is when we do it the way we're meant to do it, people become better Jesus followers. Instead of excommunicating them and just shunning them from our community, instead of pretending that they're not stabbing themselves and hurting themselves, instead we love them, we keep them, and we create this cocoon of love and healing, and then we get them, and then when they're done, when they've been healed, now we send them back out. Okay, now do as you have been done. Go find people who are hurting and healing, who are hurting, and heal them.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's a good kind of space to end on here. So, but thank you for diving into this with me, Tony. I appreciate it. I think this is really good. And I think this is kind of the opening of a greater conversation too. I think church discipline is something that everyone should kind of dive into and understand for themselves. But thank you guys so much for listening to Absurdity. If you want to subscribe, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, any podcatching app, really. I'm still working on getting us on Amazon and TuneIn and stuff like that. But most podcatching apps have us. And if you do subscribe on iTunes, please leave a review. It really helps us out. If you want to give financially, patreon.com/absurditypodcast. That is how you can support us. And a special thank you to The Haystack for also being our first sponsor. Once again, every episode from here on out is pretty much sponsored by them. So we really, really appreciate them. And if you have any comments, questions, feedback for the show, you can tweet us at Ryan180Becker or Tony, yours?
At Tony_ANOBILE. Or just look up the new Dr. Jones.
Awesome. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.